Blog Talk Radio.
Sunday, everybody. It is just another gorgeous day, and I am so extremely excited to be on this broadcast with you again today. And for those of you who you were praying for me and you are just my regular Sunday listeners and you have not yet listened to my segment of last Sunday, yes, well, last Sunday, I share with you that I got my test back from my biopsy and it's negative. So thank you for your love and prayers and for all of you who sent me birthday greetings. Yes, last Sunday, I must tell you, I did not go to bed until 4:30 that morning because I was replying to all the birthday wishes. So I thank you for all your love and prayers and blessing. And you all know how grateful I am as having you as part of my virtual family. Today's episode, I will continue for the second half of the show discussing the book, What's Possible. However, I have a guest who will be joining me in the first segment of the show, and I'm going to tell you momentarily who the guest is. But before I do that, please allow me to do a bit of housekeeping. I want to remind you that the chat room is open and it's up and running, so please join us there. And also to remind you to call in and be part of the conversation. The number to call is 646-915-8166. Again, the number is 646-915-8166. And I want to share from one of my favorite books, just a few quotes on winning. Winning is never whining. Winning is coming in fourth, exhausted, but excited because you came in fifth the last time. Winning is being glad you are you. Winning is a feeling there is no ceiling. Winning is beginning, and by beginning, the game is half won. Winning is all in your attitude. So ask yourself the question, what's winning? Each and every one of us have our own definition of winning. So my suggestion to you today is, do not live your life with other people's definition of your success or your winning or your wealth. I want for you to create and design your own definition. I want to remind you again, for the number to call in is 646-915-8166. I want to ask you to join me tomorrow evening again, when I will be broadcasting simultaneously with Mr. James Nemley at the Building Your Extraordinary Business. And you know that since November the 14th, we are showcasing each of the speakers from the Vision Weekend Conference on that show. And Mr. Nemley and I am his co-host, and what an honor it is for me. You all know how excited it is when I get to hang out with a handsome man. And my friend and colleague, James Nemley, and I, we just had such fun on a Monday evening. So join us tomorrow evening. You can sign on right here on my show. And you will be listening to one of our speakers, Mr. the Original Geek, Stephen Jackson. And I want to just go ahead before I bring my guests on live, so that we will not have to disturb our conversation with a commercial. I want to introduce you to the platform of the Vision Weekend Conference, which will be a vision transformation revolution taking place March the 23rd through the 26th at the Broadway Millennium Hotel, located at 145 West 44th Street, slap bam in New York City, in Times Square. And the platform, we have Mr. Simon T. Bailey. And Mr. Bailey is a brilliantaire, and he is the founder of the Brilliance Institute. We have Miss Crystal Washington. And Miss Washington is a marketing and social media strategist. And she's from Houston, Texas. We have Miss Jen Mullock, all the way from Scotland. And Miss Mullock is a positive achievement specialist. We have Mr. Leon Ellis. Mr. Ellis is a restaurateur, entrepreneur, and motivational speaker out of Harlem, New York. We have Dr. C.J. Cohn and her husband, Mr. Will Cohn, out of Tennessee, and they are both business consultants, business development consultants. We have, all the way from Hawaii, Mr. Brian D. Ridgway, who is a transformational mentor and teacher. We have attorney Ariella Mitchell Durant out of Arizona, Mr. Stephen Jackson, the Original Geek, out of New York City. We have Miss Yolanda Webb, who is a speaker and CEO of Elon Inc., and she is out of Hawaii. We have Mr. Sam Orm, and Mr. Orm is the CEO and founder of One Voice Worldwide, headquarters in Atlanta and also in the UK. We have Mr. Willie Crawford. Mr. Crawford is a joint venture guru, and he's also a millionaire. And Willie is like the granddaddy of the network marketing arena. And all the way from Israel, we have Mr. Kobe Huberman. And Mr. Huberman is the CEO of Strategic Landscape. He's also the head of the Peace Initiative in Israel. He's also the co-author of Strategic Leadership and the Soul. We have from Detroit, Mr. Edward Foxworth III. And he is a personal development strategist. Then we have my spiritual sister and friend, Mrs. Jennifer Sirtle, out of Rochester, New York. And Jan is a strategic expert and author. And I have Miss Chandel Pitts out of Virginia, and she is one of the best design artists that you can ever meet or ever work with. And then we have Mr. Brian Delaney out of California. And Mr. Delaney is just an expert in search engine optimization, and he can help you get to the first page on Google and just control the ranking. Then we have Mr. James Nemley, who is the CEO of the Better Business Builders. So I tell you, you are up for a treat. We ask that you visit us at DaphneClarkHudson.com, and you will be able to get more information there about the Vision Weekend Conference. I am praying that you find it suitable to be there with us in March. So we look forward to seeing you there. Now, without any further delay, I want to bring on live to the airwaves Reverend Courtney Jones. Reverend Courtney, how are you, sir?
Oh, it's wonderful. I feel great today. How are you?
I am wonderful. I want to just thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule at such short notice to come and invest in my listeners. Every time we find guests who can really make a difference and an impact on my listeners and myself, I am extremely blessed for that opportunity and gift. So I thank you again, sir.
Well, thank you. Nothing is by chance. You know, Spirit has a way of working things out. You never know
yes.
how it's going to happen.
Yes.
Just to let everybody know, it was just through an anonymous phone call that I met Sister Daphne here just a few days ago. The call came through, and I listened to the message and put the phone down and said, well, yeah, forget it. And then suddenly, you know, Spirit said, you better call her back. And so we got into this dialogue about a number of issues and a number of things, and realized that there was some work to be done.
Yes.
In fact, I have been praying about how to get some attention outside of the Midwest and the Southwest and outside of here to the East Coast, and voila, you know.
Right. We are just so thankful. But let's go to the beginning, because you have a unique beginning, and I have to tell the listeners too, nothing is by accident, as Reverend Courtney says. And I dialed a wrong number, and now today I have this amazing spiritual teacher on the line. But let's introduce you. Would you please tell the listeners, who is Reverend Courtney Jones?
Well, Reverend Courtney Jones is a guy who is from Jamaica, Kingston, Jamaica. And for years I've been practicing and studying spiritual paths. I've been an ardent Bible student, you know, and scholar. But then I realized that there had to be much more to it than just what we were reading. In fact, I remember sitting in church one day. I was Anglican, Episcopalian, and I kept telling myself, there's got to be more about this Jesus that we read about. You know, it don't fit. The puzzle is a little askew right here, and I need to find out where the pieces are. And bit by bit, you know, the Holy Spirit would show me, point me to different directions that would just put things in my lap,
mm-hmm.
as where I should be going. And And the more I did that, the more I learned. And so I, at some point, about 1997, after studying a few areas of Scott, I found myself looking for a teacher that I had in prep school because the Holy Spirit wanted me to meet with him. And I didn't know exactly where he lived because it was years before that that I had an idea where he lived. But then I walked into his neighborhood, and I stood in front of his house, not knowing it was his house. A lady said to me, are you looking for someone? Sir, I said, yes, I am. She said, who is? And I told her, and she said, oh, he lives right here. As I said, nothing is an accident. Nothing's by chance. I was standing right in front of his house. And we started to meet, and he became my mentor, my teacher, basically, and pointed me to a new teaching that would change my life completely.
Before you got this mentor and became familiar with the teaching that now direct your life, you had a unique childhood. Would you like to talk about that for the listeners?
Yes, what I could. It was very interesting because I was very quiet and very unassuming. And at night, very early in the morning mostly, I was about 5 or 6 years old. I would travel out of my body. Now I know what it was. I travel out of my body, fly out of this window every night almost, and I would meet with angelic beings. I was always connected to those, not knowing why, but I was always comforted, and because things were rough for me in those days. And so sometimes while I was out there, I would see bright lights, and I would think it was the sunshine, but now I realized it wasn't just bright lights, it was the Christ lights. They were surrounding me with that, and enfolding me in that, and taking me where they needed to take me to experience something that was not earthly. And so I embraced that. I never spoke to my parents about it because, the thing is that when you tell your parents that they say it's just a dream, and then you lose connection with that part of yourself. I always tell people, let your children dream dreams, let them have their visions, and do not tell them it's not. Tell them it's something of purpose. Or if you don't have anything good to tell them, just don't say anything, but, just absorb that. Because when children are born, they are so much closer to the spiritual plane all their years through up to age 7 at least. So after that, it shifts because we become connected to the earth plane more. And so we lose that connection if we're not paying attention. And so I kept on doing this, and all my life I've been pretty much guided, and it doesn't always pan out exactly how I want it, but who says it's supposed to pan out exactly as you want it? It's supposed to pan out the way God wants it. And that's what I've been doing.
During those years, did you ever mention, you didn't tell your parents, but was there anyone that you disclosed this to, any friend, anybody at all, or you kept it to yourself?
No, I kept it to myself. I was silent about it. In fact, in my spirit, I was prompted not to say anything. And so I didn't say anything about it. It wasn't until I became a young adult that I started talking with people who understood those things. And I didn't tell them about that particular incident, but I tell them about different things that happened after that. And so because we were on the same page with the same way of thinking, it was okay to talk to them about it. But I never told my mother anything about it until just about 1998.
Wow.
She said, this happened to you? I said, yes, it did. So, and I told my sister just last year. She was in shock. But, this is how it is. You it's better sometimes to be silent, because you will, because many times people, whatever is secret, sacred sometimes, you keep it so that you can manifest a bigger, bigger vision.
Wow.
You do not talk about, you have ideas. This is the one thing I tell people. If you have new ideas you want to work with, and you want to manifest the idea, it's okay to talk about it, but it's not okay to talk about it until you have put it all together and there's a manifestation until it comes into being. God will place in your position the people and the influences that you need to bring about what you want. But it's better to be quiet about it until until there's a manifestation.
So, during those years, did you feel as if you were special? What kind of feeling? I mean, as
I had a feeling of aloneness. I was mostly alone. I didn't know who to talk to. I was alone most of the time. You know, one of those kids all by himself most of the time. Until, well, you know, I got to high school and I would hang out with the boys and I'd do sports. But then I was always left to myself after that. I couldn't explain the things that were happening, because they weren't clear to me. So I was not an outcast or I was a bit of a misfit sometimes. So, you know, it's an uncomfortable place to be. And what you can do with that is ask God to bring you the right friends.
Yes, yes. Because even as adults growing up and you speak in tongues and all the other spiritual gifts that you have, and sometimes people feel, oh, I don't want to say nothing because I don't want people to know about that part of me. So can you imagine what it's like for a child growing up with those gifts and talents, you know?
Yes.
So when did you decide that I'm taking the lid off? I'm stepping out and I ain't going to hide no more.
Well, I started doing that quite about, let's see, 1981, 82, when I decided to really immerse myself in this particular teaching. It is the teachings of the Ascended Masters, by the way. And it didn't matter to me anymore what anybody thought, because I realized that this is what I needed and this is what I wanted to show other people, but I needed to be ready in order to do that.
Yeah.
So I really didn't care. In fact, before that, I was always a musician, a vocal musician, and I used to use music to channel the energies.
Oh.
And a lot of people would get various feelings and connections when I did. In fact, many times I'd get off stage and somebody would come to me and say, you know, I was in tears, I got what I came for.
Wow.
And so, yeah, I knew what I was about. So I was ready then to embark on this trail. But it wasn't until I got to live in Albuquerque here in 1981 that I really decided, you know, it's time to pull people together to actually teach this.
Wow.
And to practice this work, because it's all-encompassing.
And back in 1991 was when you founded the Sanctuary of Light. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the name. How did the name come about?
The Sanctuary of Light came to me, the idea came to me because I started thinking of light in the sense that God is light and your body is the sanctuary. It is a temple of light. Mm. The light of God, the light of Christ shining in, through, and around you is what makes this a temple of light or a sanctuary of light. And so We are supposed to be as sons and daughters of God, manifesting this light in abundance to everybody, to each other.
Yes.
We're supposed to be spreading this light to each other.
Yes.
We're supposed to be bringing each soul into enlightenment and not just walking around like zombies are like, we don't know what we're doing.
That's right. And when I see you as pure light and you see me as pure light, then there is no prejudices. There is no hatred. There's no jealousy.
Nope.
Because we are pure light. You know, we won't have to be fighting our brother regardless of the language they speak, the color of their hair, the texture, the color of their skin, the texture of their hair. If we begin to view each other as light, I see the light in you and you see the light in me, then we are evolving where the Father wants us to be.
That's right. We're becoming one with our God selves, with our Christ selves, with the Christ in everyone else. And that is what is important. You know, I do not leave. Every time I see a person, no matter what they look like, I in my thoughts, I don't necessarily say to the person because they might not grasp it right away, the Christ in me beholds the Christ in you. We are one.
Mm-hmm.
And in that consciousness, there can be no separation.
That's right.
You know, there can be no separation in that consciousness. And that's where I live. It does not mean I don't get challenged. I get challenges all the time. Because
you get
without
more
challenges, there can be no growth.
I find out that those of us who operate in the light, and you know, we get more challenges than the ordinary people. Like a friend of mine says, when the devil have you, you don't have to have any problem because the devil already have you. But when you decide that you're going to follow Christ, then all hell break loose because the enemy is mad. And that is so true.
And there's this issue, though. A lot of times the enemy that we have is of our own household, meaning it's all within us. The enemy that we have is all within us. A lot of times, you know, the anger and the fear and the doubt and the anxiety and the thoughts of lack and the thoughts of limitation. I'm afraid I can't do this because I don't have the power to do it. I'll never come to anything. And so these are enemies in our consciousness. It's our ego selves talking to us and telling us all this nonsense. I call it the board of directors in our heads that just chatter and chatter and chatter. And all you can do at that point, should be doing at that point, is looking at them. You can just say to that ego, stop, you have no power.
That's right. That's right. You got to tell it when to shut up. You know, I tell people all the time, you have the power to rewrite the script of your life because it's in the power of the tongue. So you can create a new manuscript when you decide you need a new one. And there is power in the spoken word. And why do you think that people are so reluctant to apply the spoken word to their life? What is so challenging? Why folks aren't embracing that?
I believe that it comes out of fear. I believe that also believe that they don't have the rights to ask God of anything, to command the energies of God to bring forth what they want. They believe that it's not right to do it because of the kind of teaching that they got initially. You know, it's not right to ask God for shelter. It's not God to ask God for your money. It's not right to ask God for, well, you know, the word says, ask, seek, knock. And
that's
when you put
right.
all those three words together, the word still spells ask.
Mm-hmm.
Ask is an A. You know, seek is an S. And, K, you know, knock is a K. It still comes out to the word ask. So we are required to ask because we were the ones that strayed away from the light. So since we have free will, we have to use our free will to get back to the light. We
That's
are required
right.
to ask.
That's right. And we have not because we ask not. And, you know, you have the power to ask. I have the power to ask. And each of the listeners has that same power to ask. You don't have to go through somebody else to ask, although I can support your asking and I can stand in agreement with your asking. I can send you light. I can send you energy. But I can step
that
up and
correct.
Ask in my boldness without you being present.
That is correct. That is correct. Because, you know, when you have the support of someone else, it comes to the point where two or three are gathered in my name, in the name mm-hmm. I am, that I am, there am I in the midst.
That's right. That's right.
It's a multiplication of energy.
Yes, yes. Let's talk about the power in these two words. I am.
I am. Within us is the creative word.
Mm-hmm.
We came out from the Father, Mother, God
mm-hmm.
with the creative word, I am. The I am dwells within us.
Mm-hmm.
The I am is a miniature action of the all-compassing Father, Mother, God, I am that I am. The first I am is Alpha,
mm-hmm.
as above. The second I am is Omega,
mm-hmm.
below. So what we're saying here is I am that I am, as above, so below. Alpha, Omega. Beginning,
mm-hmm.
ending. It's not ending, though. It's a continuation of action. So everything that you put behind the words I am, we have to be careful not to use a negative word. I am. If we keep saying I am sick, I am sick, I am sick, we're going to be sick.
Exactly.
Because you're using your rod of power downwards, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it's
mm-hmm.
better to use... in one part of the scripture it says, let the weak say, I am strong.
That's
rather
right.
Than say, I'm
and
sick,
there's a song
sick.
Too.
I
mm-hmm.
am strong.
Mm-hmm.
I am strong.
Mm-hmm.
I am in me is strong. Every
That's
time
right.
you're saying I am, you're saying God in me is.
Is.
So we have to be careful how
That's
to
right.
use the words I am.
That's
God
right.
in me is. And God in you cannot be sick.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
God in
Why?
You cannot be, you see.
That's right. While you take a sip of water, I want to remind the listeners that they can call in at any time their sweet dear heart wants them to. And the number to call is 646-915-8166. My guest is the Reverend Courtney Jones, founder of Sanctuary of Light out in New Mexico. So, listen, you need to tweet everybody you know and tell them to call into the show because you don't want to miss this episode. So, call in right now, 646-915-8166. So back to you, Reverend Courtney. As you do your work, who are the most challenging to accept this teaching when we look on gender, male or female?
I many times find that men are reluctant because they're caught up in other things and we tend to believe as men that we know everything. In fact, we know nothing, but we think we know everything, and so we're more apt to lean towards a lot of physical things. We want to do it all ourselves.
Mm.
It is not that we don't believe in God necessarily, but men are kind of
ego gets
skeptical
in the way.
Skeptical about spiritual leaders. Yes.
Yeah. Ego gets in the way too, right?
Oh, that's a main component. Yeah, ego.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we won't tell the ego to shut up. In fact, a lot of times people don't recognize the difference between the ego and the soul.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. It's tricky sometimes, you know.
Yep,
I'm going to use an analogy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to use an analogy. The Adam and Eve story, just as an analogy. It doesn't necessarily mean the story went that way, but you know they talk about the fruit of the tree of good and evil, and so here we are, and your ego says, well, you want this apple, take this apple, you know, and you say, no, I don't want the apple, and your ego backs off, and then suddenly down the line you hear your ego say something like, hey, how about an apple pie, you know, and you say no to the apple pie, and, you know, the ego comes back and says, hey, how about some applesauce? The point is that it's so subtle sometimes you never know.
That's
you
right.
You never know how it's going to hit. It's still the apple, you know, but it's applesauce, it's apple pie, it's apple, you know, and so you have those ego issues to deal with the ego.
Right.
You know, and it's kind of like that, you know, we have to just
be
alert.
Yes. Woo, this is good stuff. This is good stuff. And, you know, the thing about all of this, it is that each and every one of us, it is our responsibility to embrace that which adds value to our lives. And a lot of people get stuck on religion and on the different labels without seeking and searching and understanding the good. You know, it is up to each and every one of us. When was it? I think last year I did a survey because I was looking to redefine my brand, and a lot of my supporters call me Dynamic Daphne. Some call me the queen. Some call me the queen of the empowered soul. And the consultant, the branding coach I was working with at the time, we decided that we were going to put both handles out there to see which ones people preferred. Well, 90%, I think, between 90 and 95%, or I forget the exact percentage, said that to be safe, they're going to go with Dynamic Daphne, although they think the Queen of the Empowered Soul is also an expression of who I am. But their concern about the Queen of the Empowered Soul was that it was kind of New Agey.
And there's nothing wrong with the New Age, because we are in a New Age of Enlightenment.
So,
you see, we are in a New Age of Enlightenment, and we cannot be too bothered with the idea that people are going to say what is right or wrong about the New Age, because there have been other New Ages. When Jesus was here, it was a New Age from the age of Moses to the New Age of Jesus. Now it's a new cycle, and so we shouldn't be concerned about that.
And it is a new age now when you have two people in the same house and somebody's tweeting the other one, tell them to pass them the milk, you know. So
That's right.
People look at spirituality and think that's new age. You look at how you live your life. Your fingers don't come off the phone because you're continuously tweeting while you're in the middle of a conversation with somebody else. So talk about
the new age of communication. Yes,
that's right. People don't talk to each other anymore. They're sitting in the same room watching a movie or something, or they're in the theater watching a play, and they're tweeting each other at the same time. And it's not that I am against change and new technology, but I don't think it ought to replace the personal contact with one on one.
I think that's extreme.
Yeah. Yesterday I started a new blog. And listen, you guys who are listening, I did say I was not going to take any commercial break, but I want you to check out my new blog. It's called I Will Rise. And my first entry there is dealing with building business relationships and how both your personal relationships and business relationships impact each other. I don't think we can really separate it, because as business people and as entrepreneurs, the both of them is going to, overlap sometime or the other. So check out my blog and read it and send me some feedback about what it is, you know, if it did anything for you, you got anything out of it. So just let me hear from you there. So now, Reverend Courtney, for the people who do not understand about all this light thing and all of that stuff that you're talking about, and the I am, and the light is inside me, is the same light inside you, we are oneness and all of that, where do they begin?
They can begin by visiting my website at www.sanctuaryoflight.org.
Mm-hmm.
And there are pages and pages of simple explanations as to what this teaching is about and how
mm-hmm.
it can be effective
in mm-hmm.
practice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I encourage anyone who wants to know more about this to look at that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm open to phone calls and to emails and to going out and giving some talks if anyone sees fit to invite me to do so.
Mm-hmm. How would you say that this practice has enhanced your life overall? Because I think you have been living this practice your entire life. You really didn't come out of the closet. You came out of the closet when 1991 or something, you say? But you spent a
great
portion of your life in the closet, and now you're out. But when you look at your entire life across the board, embracing this, how has it enhanced your life? Tell us about that.
I have learned to be more tolerant and more patient and more understanding about people's way of thinking and their needs, and it has brought me to shown me how to express love for my brothers and sisters and for everyone,
mm-hmm.
despite or regardless of what their condition is. It has helped me to look at things in a lighter perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Life was very challenging in my early years, and I had a very nasty temper.
Mm-hmm.
So it was so bad that one time my mother looked and she said, "Courtney, I'm leaving Jamaica now, and you know, I'm praying for you, because if you don't kill someone will kill you."
Wow.
It was that bad, because you know I was quiet, but I did not like when people I always knew when people were lying to me.
Mm-hmm.
And when they did, and I kept saying to them, "You're lying to me. I know you're lying to me," and they knew they were, then I'd get really, really impatient and angry.
Mm-hmm.
And they would eventually tell me that, yeah, you know.
You think that was because of your early connection with the angels and all of that? Was that the reason why
I could literally hear their thoughts sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't tell them that. I could hear people's thoughts. I could feel their energy in such a way
wow.
that I could tell where it was.
Wow.
I did not know exactly how to govern what I was getting. I
mm-hmm.
didn't know how to
mm-hmm.
deal with the energies I was picking up.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, sometimes I'd sit with people and something would be going on with them, and I'd be going like, so I'd find myself going,
mm-hmm.
And then I'd tell them, "I have to go."
Mm.
And by the time I left, something would happen, and I did call me and say, you know, just after your such and such happened. But I wouldn't tell them, because I was afraid to tell them.
Right.
Tell them something was going to happen, because, you know, the first thing they said to you, "Yeah, you're practicing some kind of
mm-hmm.
magic." And
wow.
What it was about. It was about
wow.
picking up
wow.
on these energies, because everything is energy and vibration. Everything
mm-hmm.
in this universe, including everything within us and around us, is
mm-hmm.
energy and vibration, and we're
mm-hmm.
here to learn to master that.
Right.
Seeing
that you have spent your entire life with angels, how can we incorporate the skills and talents and I'm not sure what other words go along, the angelic powers, if you may, in our lives? For empowerment, how can we
do that? It comes with practice. That's why I want them to. I want everyone, if possible, to go and take a look at the site, because it gives a lot of information. And there's a specific application on the on my spoken word page that would be a guided way of doing an application every day and practicing it at least twice a day, and connecting. It shows you basically instruction just to sit quietly and then go into it. And if you practice it, the call compels the answer. If you call, when you call to your Father, Mother, God, God answers immediately, always answers immediately. We're the ones that get in the way with our fear. Our emotions get in the way, so we lose connection. The answer is right in front of you. It's, you know, just keep your harmony in the sky fall. So I suggest that everyone, if possible, go to that site and look at it and check out the information that's on it. And you can also write to me. The address is there. We can talk about a few things, and we can get something going.
Okay. Well, would you, Reverend Courtney, is there anything else you would like to share with the listeners that I did not cover before you go? And after you do that, would you please, sir, give your contact information again to the listeners?
That's all right. I can do that. I think you've covered all the bases, Daphne. I think it's been wonderful. I think it's been a really great experience just being able to tell this story and to show what is actually taught by the through the teachings of the Ascended Masters, Jesus, St. Germain, and all the Masters and the Angels. I'm glad that I had this opportunity. But I would like you, if possible, also to look at my website, www.sanctuaryoflight.org. There'll be a lot of information there. And as I said, we can keep our connections going.
Well, this has been a great experience. I want to thank you for the investment of knowledge and time, not only in myself, but in my listeners and in the vision and mission that I'm on to change our world by transforming one life at a time. And this is indeed a process that will certainly transform the lives of my listeners. I want to commend you, sir. I want to thank you for the work that you have been doing. I see the light in you. I respect the light in you. And I just want
thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you all for listening.
Thank you so very much. That was the Reverend Courtney Jones, the founder of Sanctuary of Light in New Mexico. So again, sanctuaryoflight.org is his website. Please visit his website. He says you can email him. He says you can phone him as well. And for those of you who are listening to the archive, the phone number is 505-907-8404. So visit Reverend Courtney there. You can hear he is a knowledgeable teacher who he has a wealth of knowledge and experience, willing to share. And we have not because we ask not. So here is someone who is giving us a lot. So visit the website there and just reach out. And please call here on the show and let us know what you found out there and what it has done for your life. So again, I thank Reverend Courtney for coming on. I want to continue with from the book, What's Possible, 50 True Stories of People Who Dare to Dream They Could Make a Difference. However, before I do that, I want to again read you a little bit of writing here from one of my book of quotes. And this one is Seeds of Purpose. focus precedes success. If you don't know where you are going, it doesn't matter if your alarm clock does not go off in the morning. There is a gold mine in your goal mind. So the first one is a gold, M-I-N-E, in your gold, M-I-N-D. Now, your mind is the most marvelous biocomputer ever created. It does not deal with vague ideas. It activates by specifics. Purpose is the engine that powers our lives. If you go to your place of business to see what happens, you'll put out fires but make little progress toward your goals. What you get is what you set. Focus always precedes success. And I think this is right in line with what Reverend Courtney spoke about with the spoken words. And I'll just add, we didn't talk about that, but also our intentions. Now, the story that I want to share from What's Possible this evening the title is Beauty from the Bad. And it's from Rami Gaffney, makeup artist, entrepreneur, and cancer survivor. You people, you know those people who are thankful for getting cancer because they say they need to wake up, call in, live life the right way. I wasn't one of them. Even before I was diagnosed with lymphoma at the age of 31, I was a really nice person. I was kind to children and animals and did good in the world. I didn't even take things for granted. So cancer wasn't my wake-up call, but it was my chance to put beauty in the world. Something I was determined to do because it was the one thing I could control. I'm in love with the art of transformation. I love to see how simple makeup application or an eyebrow shaping can transform a woman's face in minutes. I didn't care if it happens on one of the many celebrities I've worked for or my everyday clients. The process is magic. Every time. In 1995, I was living my dream, working as a makeup director in a major New York City salon. After years of school and paying my dues at a department store makeup counter, this was my chance to make my name on the map. I was doing makeup, getting a lot of press for fabulous eyebrow styling, and developing a makeup line for the salon. With all that hard work, it did not surprise me that I seemed to be tired all the time. At one point, it seemed everyone at the salon was coming down with the flu. That's when I noticed I was having some trouble breathing. When I inhaled deeply, I could feel a sharp pain from my lung through my shoulder. I figure I just needed antibiotics. So I found a doctor near my house and went for what I thought would be a quick fix. I honestly was not concerned when he ran a few tests. My white blood cell count came back a bit high. I figured no big deal. He ordered x-ray, which showed something cloudy around my chest. I figured the x-ray technician had messed it up because he was on his cell phone the whole time. By the time I was referred to the oncologist, things were starting to look more serious. When the doctor informed me I had lymphoma, the news hit me like a ton of bricks. I went through 5 months of chemotherapy. I lost all my hair, and because I was on steroids, I gained a lot of weight. But I only took one sick day in that entire 5 months. My regular clients were amazing. Instead of freaking out about my appearance, they were loyal and encouraging and kept coming back. I wished I could say the same about the salon management. They did everything they could to make me uncomfortable and to force me to quit. For instance, as makeup director, my job had always included hiring new makeup staff. One day, in the middle of my chemo, they suddenly hired a new makeup artist without consulting me. When I complained, their response was, "So what are you going to do about it?" Remember how I told you I was already a good person? Part of that was always choosing to take the high road. The high road takes me to good places, and the low road took me to bad places. So I kept on going by focusing on my recovery and seeing my regular clients. When I discovered the salon management was funneling my clients to the new makeup artist, a customer with an appointment to see me would show up and ask for me. She was told I wasn't in today, but this other makeup artist would love to see her. One of my clients was so concerned after her appointment that she called to see if I was okay and why I wasn't at work that day. When I assured her that I was indeed at work, I put two and two together and again confronted management. Their response again was, "So what are you going to do about it?" "Well, I'll tell you this," I informed them. "I'm not going to quit. First of all, I'm not a quitter. And second of all, I need my health insurance." "Fine then," the boss said. "If you are not going to quit, we are going to have to let you go. You are just not the pretty boy we hired." Honest to God, that's what he said. I packed my things and moved my business into my tiny Manhattan apartment. As I did, two wonderful things happened. First, let me tell you about my book. The inspiration came during those months of chemotherapy. I would look at the other patients and wish I could teach all of them some of the simple beauty tricks I knew. What can you do when you lose your hair, including your eyebrows and eyelashes? What can you do when your skin turns an odd yellow color during chemo, or your cheeks become extra red during radiation? I knew what to do because it was all happening to me. The book started as a collection of beauty rituals and evolved into a bit of spiritual guide about how to celebrate your own inner beauty. It took 8 years to get that book published, but if I do nothing else with my life, I know I've made a wonderful contribution to the world. I take the book with me when I speak to groups of cancer patients. I usually begin to talk. I usually begin by walking into a room of women going through cancer care. Their arms are crossed and they have doubt written across their foreheads, as if to say, screw you, buddy, I've got cancer. What are you going to tell me, that pink is my color? The first thing I do is show them pictures of me going through treatment, big, bald, and bloated. This was me, I tell them. That's when they literally sit up and think, maybe this guy has something to say. Then I call one of them up and do a 1 minute makeup job. This is what my style is all about. Minimum makeup, minimum impact. I like a woman to look natural, not as if she is wearing a birthday cake on her face. When the cancer patients see I can make that happen, in about 1 minute, I've won them over and I share my secret. The business side of my life continued to be challenging. No sooner than I've been fired, from the salon when another salon called me. I was told they were hiring and I should come over to talk about becoming their makeup director. That meeting was like an online date gone bad, since I was still in the middle of chemo. Oh, you don't look like your picture, they said. I explained that I was going through and assured them I was working through it and would be on the other side of all of this within a few months. I was shocked when they now say, we are actually not hiring right now. Despite the fact they had practically given me the job on the phone. These developments meant that my apartment became Rami Makeup Central. My clients were wonderful about coming there. I would shape their eyebrows and recommended makeup from various stores. Some clients suggested I sell all these products out of my apartment. I had a bigger idea. I wanted my own makeup line. This had always been a dream of mine. I had done research for the salon to start a makeup line for it, but was fired before I could do so. I knew how and I knew where, but I didn't have the cash. Still big and bald from the chemo, I went to the manufacturing facility in Toronto. The business was run by a couple of understandable want. The business was run by a couple who, understandable, wanted to know how much money I had to spend on things like research and development. Honestly, if you took every single cent I had, savings, possessions, pocket change, it might have added up to $15,000. The scale of the project I was looking for needed a budget of about $500,000. Clearly, I was out of my league. I refuse to take no for an answer. I came back day after day. I simply refused to leave. I shared with them my entire story. I told them I'm publishing a book. Magazines are writing about me. And if you give me this shot one day, I will be your biggest customer. As it turns out, the husband was also a cancer survivor. He had had tumors all over his body. And it was a miracle he survived. My story must have touched him because he finally said, okay, all right. That amazing couple disregarded the minimum order and waived the research and development fee for about $12,000. I had 5 lipsticks shade, 1 blush, 2 eyebrows, 1 eyeliner, mascara, 3 foundation concealer stick, and my signature Miracle Brow Compact. All snowballed from there. Just selling from my apartment, I sold out of about in 3 months. Within a year, I had my product in Bergdorf Goodman, one of the most prestigious department stores in New York City. I now also sell on QVC in boutiques and salons across the country, and of course, Rami.com. My best news of all is that I've reached 10 years of remission, which according to doctors means I am cured of lymphoma. I look back on that one very bad year and shake my head. As I said before, I would never have asked for any of it, but I feel empowered because I made the choice to make beauty out of bad. I learned it all about controlling what you can. I could not control cancer, the treatment, the hair loss, the weight gain, or even losing my job. But I could control putting good in the world. Because the book and the speaking appearance, so many people have benefited. That is the beauty. Full thing indeed. Darian's takeaway, who is the author, her takeaway from this book says, first of all, I love Rami's honesty and humor. He didn't need cancer to teach him to be a better person. He already was a good person, yet instead of getting stuck, why me? He moved on, choosing to control what he could. We all are capable of falling into the trap of focusing on circumstances we cannot control. Where in your own life can you see an opportunity, as did Rami, to create beauty from the bad? This is indeed a powerful, powerful, powerful story. And I know there's a Rami in each and every one of us. And with 20 minutes remaining, I think we are going to be able to do one more story. And I'm going to do the story of Megan Kelly Hall, Dead and Alive, is her contribution. Survivor of cancer and heart surgery, writer. In April 2006, I died for 96 minutes. But in thee, I saw a tunnel of light, or even get out the paddle and bring her back sense. But at the age of 32, I suffered serious strokes, some causing partial vision loss, and I ended up having to undergo open heart surgery. Yet surprisingly, it was the best thing that could have happened for my career and quite possibly my life. So how does a seemingly healthy 32-year-old go from walking on the beach to undergoing an open heart surgery? Well, this is my story. If it seems hard to believe, imagine going through it yourself. I'm not vain, but I've never liked my scars. I was a cancer survivor at the age of 2 and was deemed cancer-free after 18 months of chemo and radiation. The only evidence of the experience was a large radiation scar on my back, which I had removed in my teens. This left me with scars that crisscrossed my back, something I could keep hidden from the world. Now, it's ironic that I have a foot-long scar stretching from my neck to my midsection. At first, I could look at it. It's red and raised and very noticeable. Often, I'll scratch something, looking at my scar when it's exposed. But it doesn't bother me now. It's proof that I am here, that I survive. It is something I can't hide, and I won't, because I am a survivor. My health issues started unexpectedly with what I thought was a migraine. The vision loss was a transcendent ischemic attack, TIA, with bits of calcium or cholesterol were flicking off my carotid arteries and shooting into my eyes and my brain. It could have easily caused a debilitating stroke My doctors considered it lucky that I only lost partial vision. I was a medical enigma. No one knew why or how I was having these attacks. I had low cholesterol. My EKGs, CAT scan, MRIs, MRAs, and echocardiograms were normal. I'd had no ramification from my childhood cancer. Where was all this coming from? Why me and why now? After months of testing, they said it was a fluke and would probably never happen again. Until it did. After another major attack during a simple walk on the beach, my doctor scheduled me for a Cartwright artery angiogram and possible angioplasty. In that bright, cold operating room where I was surrounded by computer monitors, video screen, and a cardiovascular neurology team, I had my first major panic attack. They couldn't sedate me because they need me alert in the cause of a stroke. They questioned me the entire time. What is your name? Who is the president? What is the date? What is your daughter's name? I broke down, picturing my then 3-year-old waiting outside with my husband, wondering what was wrong with her mommy. The radiation treatment I received as a baby had aged my carotid arteries. They called it a radiation acceleration antisterosis. The carotid stenting was a success. But for the next year, I never stopped worrying. Would the stent work? What was the flicker in my vision? I took a never-ending supply of blood thinners, antidepressant, anti-anxiety and cholesterol low pills, iron supplements, pills to calm me down and pills to pick me up. My medicine cabinet looked as if it should belong to a rock star, not a 32-year-old woman of a toddler who rarely ever indulged in a glass of wine. After seeking therapy for a year to stop my panic attacks, I had another TIA. The stent wasn't working. Major surgery was my only option. On April 13, 2006, I had a 9.5-hour surgery. My body temperature was dropped to well below 90 degrees. My heart stopped, all brain activity quitted, and I was put on a heart-lung machine. The machine was turned off during the riskiest part of the procedure. The longer I stayed in that limbo state between life and death, the higher the risk of getting me back to the proper mental state or bringing me back at all. Luckily, the procedure was skillfully conducted by the chief of cardiology surgery at the Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. When I became fully conscious 2 days later in the ICU, I was aching all over, having been sliced open from the side of my neck to the bottom of my rib cage. My anesthesiologist told me after the fact, thankful that they packed my head in ice and lowered my body temperature and put me on the heart lung machine. Then, amazingly, they took me off the heart lung machine for 96 minutes. 96 minutes? I jokingly said, "Oh, so you flatlined me." I had imagined of I have images of Julia Roberts and Kiefer Sutherland jolting each other back to life. He deadpanned. Basically, you were as close to death as humanly possible without actually dying. It was exactly smooth sailing after that. I underwent another heart surgery after a blood clot in my arm altered them to the lighter of the fluid surrounding my heart. Then my left lung, surrounded by fluid, severed down to 1/5 the size of my right lung. Another day, another operation, the procedure was successful, and I was discharged from the hospital permanently. Today, I'm left with my frankincense scar and cerium like together with little twist ties. I knew they wrapped my cerium in titanium wire, and I imagine a large coil wrapped top to bottom. During my post-surgery x-ray, I was shocked to discover 7 little twist ties with the ends poking out. I joke with my doctor, "Which brand of twist ties did you use? Glad or Hefty?" When I finally got home, I couldn't lift anything over 10 pounds. Didn't drive or could barely care for myself, let alone take care of my daughter. My parents' house became daycare. And entire summer without cleaning, diving or working may seem enjoyable, but I spent most of the time counting down to the hours, 7 minutes, until I could take a pain medication. Being coached and bedridden for months gave me plenty of time to reflect on life. I realized that the premature birth of my daughter, born 12 weeks early and weighed 2.5 pounds, was almost like a blessing in disguise. Piper is now very healthy and happy 5-year-old, yet if I had carried her to term, the risk of having a major heart attack was debilitating, stroke was incredibly high. At that time, I had no idea about the damaged state of my cardioid. The added pressure of pregnancy could have distrust even deadly. It was during that period that I also realized that my dreams of being a published author had never been fulfilled. Yes, I had articles published in a few major magazines and had stated a figuratively literary publishing company. But my dream of getting an agent and walking into a bookstore to pick up a copy of my own book was that a dream. Up until that point, my life stretched out before me, limitless. I had all the time in the world to become a real writer, but my outlook changed. Every time I saw a foot-long gash in my chest, I was reminded of the mortality. I knew that nobody lived forever, but I never hover over that thin line between life and death before. All the cliche about life become astoundingly true. Life isn't a dress rehearsal. You only live once. Life is what happens when you are making other plans. So my plan was to write for real. I took out the manuscript I had been toying with for years and worked on it with passion. I never had before the feverish contract of agent and editor, and within a few months, I landed an agent and one of the top literary agencies in New York. Not did she love my novel, but she read my blog and that chronicled my medical expenses, and it made me laugh out loud. I used my blog as a way to funnel my frustration and activities about the surgeries and infuse it with good, close humor, which, frankly, was the only way to get through the crazy time. After several months of edit and rewrites and rejections and all of the things associated with getting your first book sold, the unimaginable happened. I received a 2-book deal with a major publisher. My book in May 2007, I also had an article in Glamour magazine, and our fiddling book published company was getting praise, recognition, and New York Times bestselling author as client. The dream has become a reality. Now, when people ask me if I have a whole new outlook on appreciation of life, I often surprise them by saying, no, I never had a glass half full kind of girl. I didn't feel particularly blessed. I don't believe that I've been given this chance to do something profoundly important. But I now realize that life is short and unpredictable. What we do with our life is completely up to us. Woo! This is indeed a great, great story. As living records, it's up to you to create the life you want. Enjoy those around you. Love what you want. You want. Never take it down to do enough. I
trust you, Lord,
but
to see me through. Will you let me look? I dare you to declare it. Tell the Lord, thank you.